Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Roofs that never performed poorly before are performing poorly now.
After last week's fatal roof collapse in Anchorage, residents are wondering if they should shovel. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 21st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the implications of a shipping boom in the Arctic.
We feel we're already behind the times in terms of what is needed for the region, and by the time this thing is built, I think we'll be behind as well already at that point.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
City and state experts are still investigating what caused Friday's fatal roof collapse at a CrossFit gym in Anchorage. 3 people were initially unaccounted for after the roof of the warehouse-style building partially collapsed Friday evening, minutes before a CrossFit competition was set to begin. Anchorage Fire Department Assistant Chief Alex Boyd said one person was able to get out on their own, another was pinned, eventually freed by firefighters and taken to the hospital, a third person was found dead inside. This morning, contractors were clearing snow off the intact sections of the roof at the building. A crate full of frosty flowers sat out front as a memorial to the woman killed, Sadie Huffer. Boyd said heavy snow loads may have contributed to the collapse.
The snow load that we have now is near record numbers. However, the codes in the city are designed to carry this snow load without concern.
The municipality is responsible for investigating what happened.
They're working with state inspectors just to ensure that anything they find can be communicated statewide. Because anytime a building collapse occurs, folks are worried.
Boyd said there was a secondary collapse on Sunday affecting another section of the building. No one was inside at the time. Boyd did not want to speculate on the specifics of this case, but he said in general, freeze-thaw cycles can cause heavier ice to accumulate on roofs, and unpermitted adjustments can also contribute to roof failures. Meanwhile, about 45 miles north of Anchorage, the Palmer Public Library remains closed indefinitely after its roof collapsed last week. The Anchorage Daily News reports that Palmer officials initially blamed the snow load and planned to do a structural analysis. And snow is piled high on many Anchorage rooftops, so some homeowners are wondering if they should remove it. Longtime home inspector Dave Mortensen says they might want to consider it.
The snow storms have produced so much snow at once that roofs that never performed poorly before are performing poorly now.
Mortensen says owners of old houses could have cause for concern about the weight on their roofs. That goes for homes built before building code enforcement began in the 1970s or with recent changes to insulation or attic ventilation, which can cause a roof to hold more snow than it used to. The more widespread issue is ice accumulating on the eaves. Mortensen says atmospheric conditions have been ideal for ice dams. They occur when the bottom layer of snow on your roof melts. Water runs under the snowpack until it reaches the edge where it freezes. Ice dams have been building this winter, blocking more snowmelt from draining and forcing it up under shingles. Homeowners across Anchorage report leaking in their homes. Mortensen says removing snow above an ice dam is a good idea to halt the growth.
If you can stop that pattern by removing that fuel, basically, then the ice damming will stop in that area.
He cautions against using metal picks or scraping shingles to avoid damage to roofing material. Throwing granulated ice melt on the ice can also help, Mortensen says, to give a path for the water to run down. Acting Anchorage building official Ross Nofsinger says the snow load in Anchorage is about 60-80% of the designed maximum for residential roofs, and warnings will be issued if it becomes dangerous.
We really wouldn't be recommending getting up and shoveling a roof right now, given the potential to fall off the roof.
If homeowners want to remove snow because ice dams are a problem, the Anchorage Office of Emergency Management warns to beware of where the snow and ice will land. The office recommends doing the work with a partner or consulting with a licensed and bonded professional. They say signs that a roof is under stress include new cracks in drywall or masonry, popped nails or screws, doors and windows that no longer close properly, and severe leaks. By 2050, ships traveling through the Arctic's Northwest Passage may not need an icebreaker to escort them for the journey. In the first in a continuing series on how increasing marine traffic could impact Alaska's coastal communities, Emily Schwing has this story from Nome, where residents are wondering whether a new port will help or hinder efforts to address chronic social problems.
Lunch service wraps up around 3 o'clock at Pingo Bakery and Seafood House in Nome. It's a tiny spot with seating for 12. Owner Erica Prismont puzzles over something she spotted on the restaurant's back porch.
First I couldn't tell where it went, but then I was like...
It is a little grasshopper. Prismont has never seen a grasshopper in Nome. She's lived here for 20 years.
Oh, it just kind of gives me the creeps a little bit.
Why?
A bug that nobody sees here is here. Like, it doesn't belong.
I'm here to talk with Prismont about what the expansion of Nome's port could mean for her local business. But at this moment, we're puzzling over this rare grasshopper held captive in a mason jar, and the irony isn't lost on either of us.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes the cruise ship visitors, they just sort of come to the threshold and peer in like you were some sort of a curiosity or... almost like you're on exhibit.
Expanding the port means larger cruise ships could come through Nome and in larger numbers.
Historically, we receive between 4 and 5 cruise ships a year.
Lucas Stotz is Nome's harbor master. He saw 9 cruise ships pass through Nome this summer, fewer than he expected due to ongoing concerns about the coronavirus pandemic and conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
We were going to have 24. That is massive growth by itself. And that industry isn't basing that growth on our facility. That was happening well before any expansion was ever slated.
As the climate warms and sea ice along the northernmost coast of North America dwindles, all kinds of marine traffic, from cruise ships to hobby sailboats to large-scale industrial ships, is picking up in the icy waters of the Arctic Ocean. According to the Arctic Council, all marine traffic increased by 44% through the Northwest Passage between 2013 and 2019.
And it's like a highway going right past us. Now, there is a lot of traffic that currently isn't coming into Nome. That's only because they're too deep draft to come in.
Deep draft. It's how far down in the water the bottom of a ship extends. Currently, Nome's harbor can only accommodate ships that extend just over 20 feet below the surface of the Bering Sea. A $250 million infusion of cash from the Biden administration's 2021 infrastructure bill means the basin could be nearly twice that deep in coming years.
We feel we're already behind the times in terms of what is needed for the region. And by the time this thing is built, I think we'll be behind as well already at that point.
Not only has the number of ships in the Northwest Passage increased, the Arctic Council reports ships aren't just passing through, but they're spending more time within the region as well. The number of miles traveled in the Arctic Ocean has tripled in the last decade. Much of the increase has to do with a drastic decline in sea ice.
Some people are saying, well, if you build it, they will come. And then some people are saying, well, they're going to come, and so then build it, right?
Well, I guess I believe in the first one, build it and they will come.
That's Nome's mayor, John Handland. He says a port expansion will decrease the cost of living while simultaneously boosting long-term investment and available jobs. Jobs are one thing Nome needs more of.
I'd be blessed to find work. I'm homeless, so I'd be blessed.
Daryl Apasingak is from Gamble on St. Lawrence Island. In July, he'd been in Nome looking for work for 2 months. He had nowhere to live and no money to buy food.
Going to the day shelter and the food bank, that or a Good Samaritan come by with some food. That's how we're eating, yep.
Apasingak is one of at least half a dozen people who regularly sit outside on the sidewalk in front of Nome's City Hall and the mayor's office on sunny summer days. The Bering Straits region is facing a serious housing shortage. The local emergency shelter is often full, especially in the winter. Chronic substance abuse is another social ill the community is fighting to manage. And while there's federal funding for the port expansion, a local funding match is required. So some residents believe the city should address the issues the community already faces before assuming millions of dollars in debt. Mayor Handland doesn't see it that way.
You know, if we build all these other resources first, because we think we need it, you know, it's all on speculation. And haven't been successful going to my bank and getting a loan for something that's purely speculative.
But Nome's modern history is built on speculation. More than a century ago, people flocked here making bets that a gold discovery would make them rich. Now city leadership is betting on climate change to move their community forward. Reporting in Nome, I'm Emily Schwing.
This ongoing series is made possible through a grant from the Climate Justice Resilience Fund. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, during a recent drug bust in Southeast, the drugs themselves were found in an unusual package.
Looked like big old overstuffed burritos.
That's right, meth-stuffed burritos. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Warm ocean water is a primary factor in the recent year's crash of Arctic, Yukon, and Kuskokwim chum salmon returns. That was the message of a presentation on day one of a Board of Fisheries meeting yesterday. Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Salmon Ocean Ecology Program leader Dr. Katie Howard shared data that correlates unprecedented low chum returns from 2020 through 2022 with warmer than normal waters in the Bering Sea and North Pacific between 2016 and 2019 when the fish were juveniles.
They were experiencing extraordinary heat waves during their first summer at sea, so in these regions, and those that survived to winter then were hit with a heat wave in the North Pacific Ocean, so they just couldn't escape it during their first year at sea.
Howard said there's a lot of evidence that the marine heat waves were unprecedented in size, magnitude, and duration, and resulted in decreased availability of primary food stocks for juvenile chum salmon.
Instead of feeding on the copepods and the krill and stuff that they normally eat, they're eating these gelatinous food items. And that's something only chum do. The other species don't do this. And those gelatinous food, like jellyfish, they're very abundant. They're everywhere. But they really offer no caloric value. They're just... They fill their stomachs, but they don't really offer much energy.
Howard said survey data indicated nothing unusual about the number of juvenile chum salmon, but the nutritional deficiency was clear.
Simply put, this data indicates that juvenile chum salmon that should have returned in 2020 through 2022 were running on empty. These fish were not attaining the energy stores they need in their first summer at sea to help them survive their first winter and subsequent years at sea.
Howard said ocean temperatures have been cooler the last 3 years, and that should result in a chum salmon rebound. Howard added that while less critical for driving the recent chum decline, harvest, competition, and predation are also legitimate concerns and are being investigated. The Board of Fish meeting is focused on Alaska Peninsula, Aleutian Island, and Chinook area finfish, including proposals related to the intercept of Chinook and chum salmon bound for western and interior Alaska. We'll be right back. 20 pounds of methamphetamine were seized last week in what law enforcement officials are calling one of the largest drug busts in Southeast Alaska in recent years. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, a regional drug enforcement team worked together to locate the meth, which was bound for Alaska on a ferry.
It all started with a tip. Alaska State Trooper Sergeant Casey Hirschberger contacted the Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs Task Force to say he'd heard a shipment of meth would soon make its way towards Alaska, and it would be big, 10-plus pounds. Lieutenant Craig Campbell of the Juneau Police Department explains.
Yeah, so we received some information from down south with some partnering law enforcement agencies that there may be a person traveling to Juneau on the Alaska Emery Highway system that was carrying a large quantity of methamphetamine.
The meth would get a heck of a ride. It would sail through the inside passage on the crown jewel of the Alaska Marine Highway fleet, the ferry Columbia, from Bellingham to Juneau. But after a trip up the coast of British Columbia, the meth's journey was interrupted in Ketchikan. Acting on Hirschberger's tip, a state trooper and a Ketchikan detective boarded the Columbia with a search warrant for stateroom 151A and its occupant, 43-year-old Oregon man Michael D. Davis. There, they found a blue duffel bag. Inside, says Ketchikan Police Lieutenant Andy Berenson, were 18 packages of meth wrapped in tortillas.
That is correct. That was a new one. So it looked like big old overstuffed burritos.
The packages totaled roughly 20 pounds. That's upwards of $1 million worth of meth. Officers arrested Davis and took him to Ketchikan Correctional Center, where he's facing a felony drug charge that carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. Information on bail was not immediately available. While Davis's journey ended in Ketchikan's jail, the blue duffel bag continued north on the Columbia, along with what investigators describe in court documents as a representative sample of the seized drugs. But now the bag's traveling companion was Jack Ford, a Ketchikan Police Department detective. Again, Juneau Police Lieutenant Craig Campbell.
Throughout that investigation, we were able to determine that the end goal for that methamphetamine was it was supposed to go to a person in Juneau who was supposed to pick it up at the ferry.
When the Columbia docked in Juneau's Auk Bay, Detective Ford walked off the ferry with the blue duffel and a phone seized from Davis. According to court documents, investigators believed the meth was coming from Miles Martin, an Oregon resident and the son of 59-year-old Juneau woman Nanette Brown. So Detective Ford texted Brown to let her know he'd arrived. Soon afterwards, a silver Nissan pickup pulled up. The driver told the undercover detective to put the bag in the truck, and the two went their separate ways. Shortly after, police stopped and arrested the driver, who they identify as Nanette Brown's husband, 60-year-old Rodney Brown. Then, officers' attention turned to the Browns' Vista Drive apartment in Douglas. They watched as Nanette Brown went to a neighbor's apartment carrying a multicolored bag. Police say it contained two ammo boxes, one with nearly $70,000 in cash, the other with more than half a pound of meth and roughly 150 pills thought to contain fentanyl. Police arrested Nanette Brown and searched her home. According to court documents, they found 9 guns and another cache of meth. The Browns are facing 2 felony drug charges and a felony weapons charge. All told, the bust was among the largest in recent memory. Campbell, the Juneau police lieutenant, says it's the biggest he's overseen in the 3 years he's been in charge of the department's drug unit. He says he expects it'll make a dent in the supply of meth in Juneau.
I think that's going to be a huge impact. I mean, we don't see that quantity come into Southeast Alaska, and it's very rare. So make an arrest where the lot or good amount of quantity is, we hear about it and we, from people from the community who we have partnered with and have contacts with.
Beardson, the Ketchikan lieutenant, says he expects the 20-pound bust to reduce the supply of meth in smaller communities throughout Southeast Alaska. And he says that's the goal of the regional task force. Though drug trafficking is sometimes thought of as a victimless crime, Beardson says that misses the bigger picture.
When people get on these types of drugs, they aren't the people they used to be. They do things out of desperation. They do things because they need to get the drugs, and so that just trickles into all other areas of crime.
Berenson says in recent years, it's also become somewhat rare to see busts aboard state ferries. Many recent busts have been tied to air travel or the U.S. mail. Berenson chalks it up to a couple of factors.
You know, the sailings haven't been as frequent in recent years, and, drug dealers essentially like a couple things, one, speed, and two, reliability.
All 3 defendants have pleaded not guilty. They're due for court hearings in the coming weeks. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks. featuring hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and a fitness center. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree-seeking students the opportunity to receive donor-funded scholarships, grants, and other financial aid. Apply for admission to be automatically considered for most scholarships. Complete financial aid applications by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A Kodiak-based seafood processing vessel has been fined over $200,000 by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration. KMXD's Brian Venois reports it's the latest in a decade of health and safety violations aboard the vessel.
According to the U.S. Department of Labor, the investigation into the Pacific Producer, a 169-foot factory fishing vessel, began in July of last year while it was docked in Kodiak. Members of the U.S. Coast Guard in Seattle also assisted in the investigation in October. The feds cited the vessel for numerous sanitation violations, including murky brown water in the ship's drinking tanks, serving expired food to crew, and fish processing water leaking into dry food storage and dining areas. Other safety violations included electrical hazards such as damaged equipment, broken outlets, outlets near water, and exposed wires, as well as no forms of fire suppression. According to OSHA, Chris Saboris is the owner of East West Seafoods, which owns the Pacific Producer. Saboris is no stranger to OSHA violations. Similar problems have been found on the Pacific Producer in 2012, 2014, and 2018, the latter of which included an ammonia leak. According to a Department of Labor press release, federal inspectors have documented a decade's worth of, quote, disgusting and dangerous conditions aboard the vessel. This isn't the first time Saboris and East West Seafoods have faced fines either. The company was charged $50,000 and 5 years probation for dumping raw sewage and oily bilge water in Chiniak Bay in 2017. Saboris declined to comment when contacted by phone on Thursday. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The Alaska Department of Public Safety is asking state legislators for $7.5 million to buy a new patrol boat. That's after an inspection last fall found its current boat unsafe to operate. The Alaska Beacon reports that the request was included in Governor Mike Dunleavy's amended budget proposal released last week. It's now under consideration in the Capitol. According to a department spokesperson, the patrol boat Enforcer had significant pitting and corrosion in the steel and a large mold infestation in the cabin. The vessel is based in Juneau. It was decommissioned in January after a November inspection turned up a wide range of problems, including aging equipment, wasted steel, and leaking hatches. The Department of Public Safety operates 88 boats of all sizes, and the Enforcer is the department's second largest behind the Stimson, which patrols commercial fisheries out of Kodiak. The Enforcer could be repaired, the department said, at an estimated cost of $3 million. It would take 2 years, but those repairs would extend the boat's life for only 10 years. A new large patrol boat could operate for 30 years, the department estimates, operate in more extreme weather conditions, and be more effective overall. The department's proposal is included in the amended capital budget now under review by budget subcommittees in the House and Senate. City leaders expect 1.6 million passengers to visit Juneau this summer. That's nearly 50% more than last year. If that expectation becomes reality, those visitors would generate more than $21 million in revenue through fees charged to cruise ships. Juneau tourism manager Alexandra Pierce has proposed putting that money toward a range of city services and projects, including the Seawalk, Marine Park, and the proposed Capital Civic Center. A 2019 settlement agreement with the Cruise Lines International Association limits how the city can spend those fees.
We're pretty encumbered on how we can spend the funds, but we also want to make sure that we're spending them in a way that not only supports the visitor industry, but also creates lasting assets for the community, which is why something like the Seawalk is a major priority.
Some of the allocations came from project proposals submitted by city departments and the public in December. For example, Capital Transit proposed adding more signs to the transit center to help tourists use city buses.
An interesting thing that's happened in the last year is an uptick in the number of tourists using the city bus. And so we've realized that we need to improve signage and wayfinding for that new increased use.
Juneau residents can email their comments to Pierce or mail them to the city manager's office until March 17th. The proposed list is available on the city's website. Those comments will be submitted along with the proposed list to the Juneau Assembly's Finance Committee. The Assembly will consider the final list during its budget cycle. A University of Alaska Fairbanks drone program has received a Federal Aviation Administration waiver to expand operations to include work for private developers of unmanned aircraft. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
UAF's Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration, or AQUASI, is one of seven FAA-designated test sites supporting the integration of drones into the national airspace, but up until now it's been limited to research flights. AQUASI Airspace Manager Tom Elmer says the new waiver allows it to work with private companies to test UAVs.
Company is looking to show buyers what their aircraft is capable of.
Elmer says under the new authorization, AQUASI can also provide teaching venues for pilots.
The companies can come to us at one of our test ranges, airspace that we've been approved under, and do training.
Elmer says AQUASI's FAA-approved testing areas in Alaska and the lower 48 are ideal for UAV developers.
All of these sites that we've been approved on are relatively unpopulous. There are large areas of farmland and tundra up here in Alaska that underlie this airspace. So it's very safe for training purposes and demonstration flights and experimental flights.
We're hoping to be like a Silicon Valley of drones up here in the interior.
AQUASI Deputy Director Nick Adkins says he expects projects resulting from the new FAA waiver to grow AQUASI operations at existing and new test ranges.
We think it's going to bring a lot of activity to Nenana and Fairbanks specifically at first, and then we're working on emerging technology ranges to expand into Palmer and Valdez. So we're going to ask for airspace permissions in those areas too.
Adkins says the waiver will also help with development of new technology, including detect and avoid systems essential to safe operation of larger drones. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Spotify. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Emily Schwing in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Brian Venois in Kodiak, and Katie Anastas in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Madeline Rose is our producer. Thanks to Lori Townsend for filling in. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.